Talking to me via telephone today is Andy Goldfarb.
Hello, Ira. Thank you very much for having me. I really look forward to our conversation.
So, Passover, to say the least, is a holiday with legs. I wonder if you can tell us why. What's the story of Passover, and what about it is a metaphor for all of us in our own personal life journey?
Well, Passover is the story of Exodus, of the Israelites escaping from slavery in Egypt to wandering in the wilderness to reaching freedom in the Promised Land. And I believe that that's a universal story for all of us. We all have our own modern-day servitude, although not chains and ropes, although that's de rigueur with 50 Shades of Grey, but our own sense of encumbered free will. And so we are all striving in some form or fashion to reach our own Promised Land. So that's, you know, kind of a universal message. There are other messages in Passover, many of which we talk about on our site, but the basics versus the extras. The food matzah, which we eat, literally means to drain out, and it is ultimately the essence of food, just flour, water, salt, and a little oil. And that is the sustenance for people. And so it helps you identify in your own life what are really the basics that you need and what are the extras that you don't need and how you can live. There's other messages as well that we could talk about.
If Passover is such an old tradition, 5,000 years old comes to mind to me, why not just leave it alone? Why do you and so many other families try to make it new?
Well, I guess what comes to mind is there's a saying by Heracles, which is, no man ever steps in the same river twice, for it is not the same river, and he's not the same man. So each year when our family gets together to celebrate Passover, we make our own Haggadah, and we look at ourselves differently every year, and we all have changed in many ways. And so I think it's an opportunity to grow as a person. My first Seders I did as a kid. For 15 years, I never once found the Afikoman. My older brother found it every single year. And then I had a lot of traditions from that time. And then when I first did my own Seder, I was living in Asia, and that was a different experience. And then when I did my first Seder with my own children, that's when I started with my tradition of making lucky matzo balls. So each of my experiences, I've been in a different time and place and different people around me, family and friends. So, you know, I think it's always important to adapt.
So you mentioned the Passover Haggadah, which for people who aren't familiar with Passover, is the book that sets forth the order and tells the story of Passover. I've read that there are over 4,000 published versions of the Haggadah. But you know what? I think that's a lowball figure. I think there are more. So you guys make up your Haggadah new every year? Is that what I'm understanding? And I guess my question is, when I was a kid, that was the most boring part of the Seder, when the grown-ups went through the ritual. So just tell us briefly about your own family Haggadah, and tell us how you keep it interesting for the kids.
So first of all, you know, we start off with the idea of making things magical, meaningful, and memorable. And to me, my goal is to create tradition for my children. And tradition is repetitive action with meaning. So if you can stimulate their mind and touch their heart and uplift the soul, it becomes a much more, you know, full experience. So when we start off with our Haggadah, we actually decorate it as a family. So my kids, this is for 10 years we've done this, they decorate the cover and they do the art. So right out of the gate, when we are sitting down for our Passover Seder, they are looking with pride that they made the Haggadah that everyone is looking at. And they've made the placemats, and we do a lot of art and decoration to get the kids involved. With regard to the actual Haggadah itself, during the year, I'm always looking for new things. And on our site, breakingmatzah.com, we put a lot of the ideas of how we look at different parts of the Seder, and there's so much to talk about, and each year we want to emphasize a different part. One aspect of our Haggadah that's very meaningful is our dinner discussion, and we come up with questions each year Usually we have around 25 people at our Seder. We always have first-time participants, and we always have non-Jews, as well as my family and friends. And everyone gets the question a week in advance, and everyone is required to give their answer to the question. And it's an opportunity for the youngest to speak and be heard by the oldest, and vice versa. And I can give you some of the examples of the questions.
I'm going to get to that. That is a question that I have sort of toward the end. But right now, I wanted to talk a little bit. You touched on it. We keep talking about matzah, the significance of matzah, and you mentioned the afikoman. So I wonder if you could give just a 60-second rundown, again, for people with whom who may not have grown up with this. What's this thing about this cracker, this simple flour and water cracker, and what's this thing, the afikoman?
So the matzah is the ritual cracker that the Israelites made when they were slaves in Egypt, and it was really the essence of what they had. They were in a hurry, so they only cooked it for 18 minutes because they were rushing to leave and escape from Egypt. In terms of the meaning, it means to drain out, so it literally is the essence. And as you expand and add yeast to your food and grow as a person, you go from Mitzrayim, which is Egypt, the narrow place, to your more full being. So that's sort of a metaphor. In terms of the afikoman and matzah, the way we start our Seder, we start with a matzah eating race, a contest. Everyone who wants eats one piece of matzah as fast as possible without any water, so you know what it's like to be an Israelite wandering in the wilderness. So that sets a fun and festive mood for all the kids and everyone there. And then we start with a magic trick where I invite the kids up, and they shuffle three pieces of matzah to make sure they're ordinary pieces of matzah. I then break the middle piece, and I turn an ordinary piece of matzah into the extraordinary piece of matzah. And the afikoman is so special because the kids usually get a reward for finding it. We hide it during the meal. The kids go around looking for it. It's sort of the highlight in some ways for children, for the Seder. In some ways it may be analogous to, you know, an Easter egg, you know, the kids are looking for the Easter egg hunt.
Is there a reason why we search? What is the reason we search for the afikoman?
So you search for it for a number of reasons. One is it kind of keeps the kids interested in the service. But the biblical sense is that it is really the hidden part of ourselves. It's the hidden false god of the north. That was one direction the Israelites would have gone, which was their past. And the other direction was to go directly into the Red Sea, which was their path to freedom, but it was, you know, obviously a body of water. They chose not to go to the past. They chose the freedom, and then the Red Sea was parted. And so by ingesting and digesting our past, what we do is, instead of being a slave or a prisoner to our past encumbering our mind, we preserve our past in our heart and digest it in our system. So that's one interpretation.
You're listening to The Lowdown with Ira Wood and WOMR. And today we're talking about Passover, the most widely celebrated Jewish holiday in the United States, which, as if you've been listening, you already understand that it has resonance for people of all religions. My guest is Andy Goldfarb, whose website, Breaking Matzah, matzo.com, is a free online resource for everyone who wants to make Passover magical, meaningful, and memorable. So, Andy, there are six symbolic foods on the Seder plate, each of which has special significance to the telling of the Passover story. But I think everyone's favorite by far, at least in my family, is the charoset. And on BreakingMatzah.com, you have no less than seven recipes for it. So tell us, what is charoset? What does it signify? And how come so many recipes?
So charoset is a mixture of fruits and nuts and some wine, and there's a lot of recipes that we go through. Traditionally, people make what's called Ashkenazi charoset, and it's supposed to represent the mortar that the Israelites put between the bricks as they were slaves. So in that sense, it connects them with their slavery. Interestingly, it's sweet, and one of the interpretations is in slavery, there's a sense of familiarity. And so you can endure slavery for a while. It's not like it's so horrible and impossible that you have to escape. And that's why a lot of us stay in our own slavery, whether it's a, you know, relationship that we shouldn't be in or a habit that's not good for us, and it's an encumbrance on us. So that's sort of the traditional meaning of it. We like to make Haroseth from around the world. So we make Ashkenazi, Sephardic, Spanish, Italian, Moroccan, and even Chinese. And the universal message that I like to have as that is to celebrate, regardless of the different flavors of people around the world, we all share the universal quest to return to our proverbial promised land. And that's why we make so many varieties of Haroseth.
So you mentioned Chinese Haroseth. Now, I must admit, I've been around for a while, but I've never heard of Chinese Haroseth. But mm-hmm. the story that you tell along with it entails your own history in Asia and the story of Jews in China during World War II. I wonder if you can talk about that briefly.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Chinese Haroseth is my own recipe. I'm bilingual in Japanese. I used to live in Japan and worked for Kikkoman, the Japanese soy sauce company, which is one of the reasons I use soy sauce in it, because it's such a strong ingredient in Asia. And I had my first adult seder when I was in Japan, and then I traveled extensively in China and visited some of the synagogues there. And basically, we talk on the website about Jews in China, and the specific story you're talking about is called the fugu plan. And the fugu fish is known in English as the Japanese blowfish. It's a delicacy. If you're going to eat it, go to the most expensive restaurant you can, because the way that they serve it is they serve the fish with enough of the poison to give you kind of this high, but not so much to kill you. So that's why I would make sure to go to a well-reputed restaurant. Anyway, what the Japanese did was they had, it was this guy named Sugihara, and he was a Japanese diplomat in Lithuania. He issued a lot of exit visas for Jews in Lithuania to escape. They ended up going to Japan and settling in, they were going to be settled in Manchuria. While they were en route, they ended up being in China, and Hitler sent the gas chambers to have the Jews exterminated. The Japanese interviewed the Jews, and they figured they must be like the fugu fish. I mean, they were doctors and professors and lawyers and seemingly very productive citizens, but there must be something poisonous about them. Otherwise, why would everyone try to kill them? They interviewed the Jews. They ended up sending the gas chambers back, and they ended up having, there was probably about 20,000 Jews during that time from Germany and Austria and Poland and around Europe in China that were spared. So it's a very interesting story. Sugihara has gotten a star, and he's recognized at Yad Vashem as an ordinary person who did extraordinary things. And we talk about a lot of the history of all the Jews in each of the countries where we celebrate the Haroseth. So the history of the Jews in Morocco and Italy and Spain, etc.
Fascinating. So, all right, let's get down to brass tacks here. I don't want to brag, but I am known as the best matzo ball maker on Cape Cod. Now, I gather that you also make a mean matzo ball, but you are a sinker guy and I am a floater guy. So I'd like you to explain for, I have to say, people who don't know, although that's amazing to me, the difference between the sinkers and the floaters and what makes your matzo balls so good.
Well, the key difference between sinkers and floaters is the ingredient of air. There's more air in the floaters than the sinkers. And the way that we create that air is by whipping the egg white separately from the yolk to create buoyancy and structure within which you have the air. When we do the sinkers, we just beat the eggs in and of themselves so you don't get as much air. So
you don't see, my secret is, it's not much of a secret because it's on the box, but my secret is soda water, is seltzer.
That provides air as well.
But then one of the things I don't do, and I promise people I will get off the making matzo balls conversation, is I pack them very, very lightly instead of very heavily before I drop them into the soup.
So, you know, everyone has their own taste preferences, and it's so much fun to share recipes, and that's what we want people to do on the site. The thing that I'm most proud of about my matzo balls is I make lucky matzo balls.
Yeah, what's that all about?
So, basically, there's a food that's called schmaltz, which is rendered chicken fat. It's what you—it's sort of the essence of traditional Jewish cooking. And when you render the chicken fat, the byproduct is schmaltz, and then the crispy bits are called gribbitus. And so I hide a piece of gribbitus in every third matzo ball. So when my kids are eating them, they get so excited, like, did I get a lucky matzo ball? So it turns an ordinary piece of ordinary matzo ball soup into an extraordinary matzo ball soup by just creating fun and delight over something seemingly innocuous. So that's something that, you know, has really been fun at our Seders, and it's always a topic of conversation. You know, did I get a lucky matzo ball or not?
You're listening to The Lowdown with Ira Wood on WOMR. Today we're talking about Passover. And we're talking to Andy Goldfarb, whose website, breakingmatza.com, M-A-T-Z-O.com, is really a phenomenal resource for everyone who wants to make Passover magical, meaningful, and memorable. So adults drink a lot of wine during Passover. Kids obviously don't, but you have something, most kids drink grape juice, but you have something called kids' wine. What is that?
We just put sparkling water and cranberry juice.
Okay, so that's the kids' wine.
We call it kids' wine, and we want everyone to feel participating and involved in the service.
So the Passover ceremony is one in which we ask questions, but you've gone farther than the famous four questions, and as we discussed before, your discussion questions really try to engage people to think about their lives. And one of the reasons I think that's especially important is because after we've done the singing and after we've done the drinking and after we've been at the table for a long time, people get really logy and they get tired. And some seders, people end up just telling jokes, but you actually engage people in meaningful conversation. And I'm fascinated by some of the questions you use in your seders. Could you tell us some of the topics you ask people?
Yeah, so basically we do it over dinner, and as I said, we send the questions out in advance, and we want everyone to have a voice. And I think it's so empowering for the youngest kid to be able to give their answer. And I'll give you an example. One question that we rotate the questions over year. Each year I come up with a new question. On our site we have about seven questions, and there'll be more over the years. There is the proverbial glass of wine for Elijah, who is one of our greatest prophets, who supposedly never died, and he comes back and he helps the needy, and some people have a chair for him. So we say, if you could have your Elijah come tonight to our Seder, who would it be and why? Friend, relative, historical figure, living, dead, who would it be? And a six-year-old girl named Elizabeth said, my name is Elizabeth, and I'm named for my grandmother, but I never met her, and I would gladly give up my name in order to meet her tonight. And it was so beautiful, you know, to hear, you know, that type of, you know, response. And it was powerful for her to say it, and it was probably even more powerful for her parents to hear it.
And you guys listen. You put a great premium on listening to the kids. And I'm sure that the kids really, really look forward to that night, because of all nights, they know they're going to be listened to.
Well, in Judaism, giving a voice to the young is an important part of our philosophy. So it starts every Saturday. There's a bar bat mitzvah child reading from the Torah and teaching the congregation. In Passover, we have the four questions for the youngest to ask the questions. And so from my experience, if you give children a voice, it makes them feel empowered, engaged, and involved. And if you show the respect of the oldest listening to the youngest, and then because we each answer the same question, the youngest get to hear the oldest give their response to the same question. And we it's just amazing how different everyone's responses are, and it really is beautiful. We talk about Dayenu, what's something that you're grateful for, and a little girl named Delilah said, you know, I'm so appreciative that my parents drive me to all my after-school activities. And, you know, the parents are like, gosh, we've been driving all around, and how much do parents hate doing all the driving, but do the kids even appreciate it? And here in this sort of spontaneous moment, they realized how much appreciation and gratitude their child had for all that driving.
So you've thought really, really hard over the years to make the Seder fun for kids. I wonder, were there any things that you used that you discovered didn't work and that you wouldn't do again?
You know, we always experiment and we always do, you know, some things new and some things different. I end up moderating myself because there's so many things I want to talk about and so many things I want to do. I guess the biggest thing that I changed was the Afikoman. In the beginning, I would give a reward to the kid who found the Afikoman, and it really created some negative dynamics. And also, it brought back bad childhood memories since I never once found the Afikoman.
So you said.
So what I do is I actually give a reward to all of the kids, represented by their leader who found it, but everyone gets a chance to get a reward. So I really describe it as the team of children as opposed to any individual child.
For someone listening whose family might not have a Seder to go to this year or a family starting a Seder for the first time, can you offer maybe some of the simplest things that they can do to start having a meaningful Seder?
So we have all of our content on the site is divided by kid-friendly, fast and fun, and over the top, and we give a lightning fast Seder to the youngest kids. And we just say, you know, here are the key elements to go through, you know, for making a Seder, you know, accessible to young kids. And so, you know, you can go on the site to see it, Lightning Fast Seder for Kids. And, you know, basically, if you really distilled it down, just talk about the Seder plate and what the Seder plate represents, because each of the elements have a lot of meaning. So if you did nothing but the Seder plate, Dayenu, it would be enough. And if you had one more chance, I would encourage people to do one of the discussion questions. And then, most importantly, I would get the kids engaged in art, in some sort of preparation for the service by creating something, whether it's art. And we also, for the youngest kids, we make the Ashkenazi Haroseth, which is so simple. And I just have the ingredients, and I let the kids mix it up themselves so that then they see that on the table we're eating something that they made. So I think involving and engaging young kids is wonderful. Obviously, if it's an older group with no kids, there's you know, wonderful discussions that you can have.
So I just have two more questions. We have about three more minutes. And I'm going to ask you something and you can do with it what you want to, but this is something that's really troubling me, and it has been for the past couple of years. On Seder night, there are many people assembled, and that means different political beliefs. How do you respond to people who have different ideas about the troubles in Israel right now?
Well, I mean, you know, there's politics, and then there's spirituality. I mean, Israel has been this spiritual home for Jews and Christians and Muslims. It's a thriving democracy. It's brought so much good into the world for so many years. So, like any situation, there's always conflicts. I think that it is literally the land of milk and honey. It is the promised land for so many people. So having a connection with Israel and supporting it and recognizing the importance that it plays in so many different religions. And as I say, people of different flavors all share the common quest of supporting the promised land. So to me, it's sort of a universal message that we all are striving to be in that, you know, special promised land.
Okay. So the last question, breakingmatza.com, or let me just put it this way, Breaking Matza is on Facebook, and I assume you're open to interaction with Facebook friends who might want to like you. What do you hope to hear from people?
So that's a really appreciate you mentioning. That's what's been so wonderful is this is a social media platform for me to be able to share more easily because I've always been photocopying my Haggadahs every year and mailing them to people. So now we can share it more easily with the cooking videos with my kids and food, fun, and philosophy and all the ideas. We really want on the Facebook page for people to share their ideas. I'm not an expert. I'm not a rabbi. I'm just one person. But I'm a catalyst for this community. And what I would love and dream for is for everyone to contribute their ideas for food, fun, and philosophy.
Breaking Matzah, friend them on Facebook, and you're going to get all this stuff for free. Today we've been talking about Passover. My guest has been Andy Goldfarb, a venture capitalist from the Boston area, who's been sharing his ideas on how to make Passover magical, meaningful, and memorable. I want to thank our engineer, Matthew Dunn, who is licking his lips as he fondly remembers his own Passover seders at his Bubby's house in Syracuse when he was a boy. Have a great week, and if you'd like to read about all of Andy's ideas, check out his website, breakingmatzah.com, and like them on Facebook and participate now and in the future. This is Ira Wood, just trying to talk to all the people I can find who are trying to repair the world, one interview at a time. Bye for now.